When you think of charcoal, you probably think of those briquettes you buy at the store for the grill. But for a long time, charcoal bricks were the lifeblood of the Northeast's iron industry, fueling furnaces that manufactured everything from weapons of war to iron train wheels that crossed the country. As Patrick Scahill from Here and Now contributor WNPR reports, you can find that history scattered all over the Connecticut woods.
I think we got to go this way. Sorry.
Emery Gluck and I stumble through the woods of Whitney Forest in eastern Connecticut. Gluck is a volunteer with the Connecticut Forest and Parks Association, and today we're searching for remnants of another era, charcoal.
Unfortunately, it's very subtle, and as you can tell, since I'm having a little harder time remembering where this is.
The charcoal in this forest is basically old wood that was burned in a controlled fire and transformed into a purer form of carbon. It was then used as fuel. Up until the early 20th century, people called colliers made the stuff, and the work wasn't glamorous.
They lived in hovels, in the woods.
Sometimes you can find relics of those hovels, old stone chimneys islanded in the middle of the forest. But Gluck and I are looking for something smaller, less obvious remains of charcoal mounds, and eventually we stumble into some.
Here's some charcoal.
Oh, look at that.
I didn't plant that, I promise you.
Okay. Holding the small shards of black charcoal, you can't help but imagine what it was like to manage a charcoal pit in the 18th and 19th century. Back then, Connecticut's forests would have looked a lot different. Hills were stripped of trees and wood piled to make charcoal. I travel next to Goodwin State Forest in northeastern Connecticut and meet up with Lance Hansen. He's with the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and outside of work, he's a bit of a charcoal obsessive.
Looks almost like some kids got rambunctious and stacked some logs.
Hansen takes me to a replica he built of a charcoal mound. Wood is piled several feet high, a smaller scale model of what colliers would have done centuries ago to make fuel. There's a chimney in the center.
It's basically stacked logs, and you try to make it as tight as possible because this is where you don't want air coming in. And then you fill the inside of it all with logs, smaller logs, that when you eventually are going to dump in the embers to light it, that's what will catch.
Colliers tended to the embers with a big stick called a fagin pole.
So the collier could lift it out. They can see from the charring how it's going. As the pile shifts, as it starts to burn, it helps them find the center.
To do this, the collier would actually have to climb on top of the mount and sometimes have to jump the pit, leaping over what was essentially a smoldering hellmouth. One 1901 newspaper account describes a teenage collier who fell 20 feet into one mound, his clothing ablaze as he climbed out of the pit. The teenager walked home and eventually died. But colliers must have thought the risks were worth it. After all, Hansen says the nearby market for charcoal was huge.
You think metal in that time, you'd think Pennsylvania, Ohio would have been the place. No, it was Connecticut. It was the northwest corner of Connecticut, Berkshires and Massachusetts, and then eastern New York.
A place called the Salisbury Iron District, which hosted dozens of iron furnaces from the time ore was discovered there in 1731. By a waterfall on the Blackberry River in northwest Connecticut, I look at one of the places where, beginning in the mid-1800s, charcoal from all over Connecticut and later the nation would be burned, the Beckley Iron Furnace. Dick Paddock, a volunteer at the massive restored marble structure, says for nearly 200 years, iron ore from the Salisbury District turned up everywhere, including in cannons used during the American Revolution. Later on, Paddock says local iron was a hit in another market.
Railroad freight car wheels, 33-inch freight car wheels.
Yeah.
For a reason we don't yet fully understand, iron from this portion of Connecticut was exceptionally strong and resistant to cracking. And the contemporary information we have from the period they manufactured them says that they usually would outlast the cars they were under.
But Paddock says the iron industry here had another lasting legacy, open space. Here's what happened. Beckley and other furnaces consumed so much charcoal that acres and acres of land were bought up, trees taken down, burned, and made into charcoal. After a while, it was hard to keep up.
Toward the end of operation here, charcoal and or wood for charcoal was coming from Vermont and as far away as Michigan. So we had consumed our forests.
But the trees on that charcoal land kept growing, even after Beckley closed in 1919.
And that's where we get things like People's State Forest, Great Mountain Forest, Housatonic Meadows. That's all old iron land, iron company land that was being used as charcoal source.
Today, that open space is regrown forest, pockmarked with shards of charcoal, subtle windows into Connecticut's industrial past. For Here and Now, I'm Patrick Scahill.